The Jefferson County Memorial Project, based in Birmingham, remembers the black men and women killed in racially motivated violence by white mobs during the Jim Crow era of segregation in Alabama. Earlier this year, a plaque was installed along the railroad tracks in the town of Irondale, recalling the killing of a black man there in 1896 as he tried to make a purchase at a grocery store. Margaret Norman is a former research fellow with the project. She and Alex Malonis are members of the Irondale Memorial Coalition. Margaret, Alex, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having me.
Just briefly walk us through what happened.
William Wardley was actually traveling through Irondale when he was killed. He attempted to pay for some apples while he was traveling through and was accused of using counterfeit money. Later, that was actually determined to not be counterfeit, although that's something that we actually try to not focus on too much. But he was pursued by a mob, and that mob included a local minister, other members of the community, and he was shot by the train tracks running out of Irondale. He was actually with two companions, too, one black and one white, and we don't know their names, we don't know who they were, and they both escaped. The thing that is really powerful in thinking about this particular case is that because he was traveling through, we don't actually really exactly know who William Wardley was. So, you know, when I was doing this research, I combed all of the census data that I could. I looked at train routes going from various places through town, and I have some guesses, but we don't exactly know who he was or where he was coming from or where he was going. And so for me, one of the most powerful parts of the marker is that this is bringing his story to life when it has been sort of largely erased from the historic record. And the last thing I'll say about sort of the history of this case is that there was actually an investigation. So we don't have a death certificate or anything like that, but we do actually have the original report from the Treasury Department. They sent agents down really to investigate the counterfeit claims. And in that report, it really does focus on the alleged crime, which they then determined that the money wasn't counterfeit, and says very little about the fact that somebody was also killed.
And then after the violence came the silence, came the erasure.
The way the Memorial Project thinks about this is that Mr. Wardley suffered multiple deaths that day. There was the killing of his body, but there was also the erasure of his life, of his history, of his story from the record, which of course that erasure is in service to the lynching project itself, to the broader story of racial terror lynching, not only in Irondale, of course, or Jefferson County, but across the country in the post-war era.
What do we know of what came before his case, what came after that you folks have brought to light or know that you still need to research out there?
The Irondale Memorial Coalition has really focused on this one case, but in the larger project of the Jefferson County Memorial Project, there are 33 victims of lynching in Jefferson County. When we started the project, there were actually only 30 identified. So just in the process of doing that research, other research fellows have uncovered new cases, people whose stories have really been hidden. And the other thing I wanted to say was that in the aftermath of this case, and in many cases, newspaper accounts and sort of community accounts do maintain William Wardley's guilt, even though it was proven to not be counterfeit. So I think that that's something else powerful that commemorating these stories does, is, like Alex said, it holds the community to a level of accountability that they were able to shirk at the time of the actual incident.
What's next for your work?
I think that's difficult because, like the rest of us, though we were able to erect the memorial, the coalition has been scattered because of the crisis to some extent. But we do want to look ahead, because what should be clear is that we aren't experiencing a crisis right now, but rather several converging crises. The pandemic hasn't caused inequality and violence and dysfunction. It's exposed it. It's exacerbated what has already been there. And so we think that that has made the broader work of memorial projects like ours all the more important. And I think that comes through in some of what Margaret has just said. Some of the parallels we were thinking through at the time of the unveiling between Mr. Wardley's murder and the police murder of George Floyd speak to that. The publicness of both of the murders, either irrelevant or precisely the point, killer's death to plead for mercy, situations where suspected crimes become justification for others to act as judge and jury and executioner, killings that communicate a clear message to the targeted communities. We don't know what direction we're going to go with the Memorial Project, but we do believe that the work is as important as it ever has been.
And to keep up on that work, where can people go online?
You can see our work through the broader Jefferson County Memorial Project, the website.
It's jeffersoncountymemorial.com.
You can also find us on Facebook through the Irondale Memorial Project, which is really where we archive all of the work and our communications.
Yeah, and it's jeffersoncountymemorial.com.
All right. Margaret, Alex, thanks so much.
Thank you for having us.
Last fall, Joy Brown became the executive director of the Jefferson County Memorial Project. This month, we caught up with her. Joy, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Ray, for having me again. I enjoyed our conversation so much last time, and I felt like we had more to talk about then, so I'm so excited to continue our conversation.
And indeed, we do have more to talk about with the Jefferson County Memorial Project. Let's talk first about markers.
It's been a busy year. We were very excited to install our Irondale marker with the Irondale Coalition. That was a project that we had been working together on since 2018. So it was so amazing to see it come to fruition and to see the community support of it. We weren't able to have an in-person unveiling, but we were able to do a virtual unveiling, and it was really well received online. It's in such a prominent, powerful location in Irondale. It's in really basically like a downtown city center area that's got heavy foot traffic. It's very picturesque. If anybody is familiar with the city of Irondale, it's like a railroad, a small town. And so it's right there by the railroad depot. And I'm always excited for these markers to be in prominent places, not siloed or isolated, but where everybody can see it, because when we think about these lynchings, many of them occurred in public squares for everybody to see. And so I think that just adds tremendously to that rehumanization of these victims. We've got four others that we're working on this year. We've got one in the Fountain Heights neighborhood, which is on the north side of Birmingham. We're working to put one there in Oak Hill Cemetery. And Oak Hill Cemetery is one of Birmingham's, if not the oldest cemetery in Birmingham. Notable figures like Fred Shuttlesworth are interred there. But the unique part about Oak Hill Cemetery is that is where our first documented lynching victim, Lewis Houston, is buried in a pauper's grave, which currently is not marked. It's just kind of near the back of the cemetery, a grassy area. But the director of the cemetery is actually working towards developing a memorial garden in that area, marking that is where these folks are buried. And so that's where the marker will go. So we're working now to gather a committee out there. It's in its earliest phases. So right now we're working with the community to get a coalition developed and work on community programming before the marker actually comes. And then there are three others. Like I said, this is a busy year. We've got one in the Brookside community, which is a rural area north of Birmingham. The unique aspect about that marker is our first marker, which is at Sloss Furnace in Birmingham. It's actually the same three victims that will be on this marker. The reason that the marker is at Sloss Furnace is because the Sloss family owned the mines, Brookside Mines, that was the location of these three lynchings that occurred in Brookside. And so we knew that would be a very prominent place to put a marker and get lots of visibility and help educate all of the visitors that visit Sloss Furnace. But it felt like there needed to still be a marker in the Brookside community to acknowledge those victims. So that one will actually go outside of a really historic location in Brookside. It is, they call it the Old Negro School. It was the first school for Black children in the Brookside community. And so the coalition out there working to get that building restored, they've done a great job already on the exterior and working to get it on the National Registry of Historic Places. So that marker will be an addition to that area that they're already working toward. And then we've got two others. We've got one going in Pratt City and the East Lake area. The East Lake Coalition has already begun working on community programming. Of course, most of that will have to be virtual right now, but they're very engaged. That marker will be in Stockham Park in East Lake, and that marker will be our first marker that is actually in the location of where the lynching there occurred. George Meadows, the gentleman that was lynched out there, he was actually lynched in Stockham Park. And so that's our first and only marker. A lot of these markers and a lot of these lynching, when you do the research, it's hard to pinpoint a specific area unless in the newspaper clippings that we're able to find says, you know, it happened in this park. And that park is, of course, still there. So, and then last but not least, the Pratt City marker, as I mentioned, that one has been on hold. We actually started working with their coalition last year, right before the pandemic hit. And as a part of their community engagement, they wanted to do a community quilting project. And so they were so intentional about wanting to do that work that we did not want to omit that part of the project simply due to the pandemic. And we want it to be as safe as possible. So we're hoping now as people are able to get vaccines that we can continue that hopefully maybe summer into the fall.
And then you have virtual programming.
We have gotten our feet under ourselves as far as virtual programming. So we've been doing a lot of work kind of behind the scenes, recording, really engaging in-person programming that we're able to live stream, you know, at later dates. So we've been working with middle schoolers. We've been working with Bush Hill STEAM Academy, sixth graders out there with their art and history teachers and a teaching artist to teach them about advocacy and empathy through learning about the Green Book. People often ask, like, you know, how do you teach this history to young children? Do you just bring up lynching right there? And I always tell people, no, but you can teach them about concepts and morals that tie into why these atrocities were so terrible. Two of those things are empathy and advocacy and also self-advocacy. It's been amazing. The kids have been so receptive and so excited, and teaching them about this history through art and also poetry, it's a way for them to grasp it, and it's an excellent way for them to express themselves. So the project is called the Green Book Project, and they have each created their own version of a Green Book cover with an accompanying poem. Their work will be displayed on our website in a virtual Green Book 2021 edition, if you will. We have been recording them through the process, whether that be via Zoom or when we are able to get in the school, getting their own personal reflections about what it was like creating this Green Book and what it may have been like having to actually use a Green Book during that time. We've got that scheduled for April 29th at 6 p.m. Central Time via our Facebook, just Jefferson County Memorial. That's a project we're working together with the Greater Birmingham Arts Education Collaborative. So that's just one of those community partnerships that's been extremely impactful. Also exciting to work with younger kids. That's kind of that bright light in doing this work, dealing with difficult history.
And not only dealing with difficult history, but also dealing with the difficult present. And that brings us to the focus on mass incarceration.
Yes. Oh my goodness. That is so real, what you just said. And I think this year has been particularly taxing doing this work, because it's one thing dealing with difficult history, like you said, but when you turn on the TV every day and you just walk outside every day and you see like the legacies of this history that are still impacting so many people today, that really becomes your why. Everybody knows us for these markers and being the group that's wanting to bring our county's monument home. But one of our lasting like impact that we want to do is our goal of advocacy and working to educate people about some of the many things that are still wrong with our current justice system and mass incarceration. Another one of those bright lights at the end of the tunnel that occurred late last year was one of the gentlemen that we worked with on our Incarcerated Voices blog, who contributed artwork and poetry, Ronald McKeithen. We found out that he would be possibly released within, they told us soon. So, you know, we thought soon could be 6 to 12 months, you know, anywhere up to a year. And I'll never forget this day. It was 3 days before Christmas, and I get a phone call saying that Ron had been released with time served. It was an amazing moment that I'll never forget. And since then, Ron, he's got an excellent support system, and we all try to back him and support him as much as we can. But he's really been paving his own way, really. He has been teaching kids and teenagers art classes at the Birmingham Museum of Art. He's now got 2 art exhibitions this month and next month. That has just really been a moment where we have been able to see our work come full circle. And I don't think it's even quite fully full circle yet, because, you know, it's fabulous that he's teaching kids art and has these art shows. But the real thing is, like, is he able to make a sustainable life for himself now that he's a returning citizen? And he has been able to do that. And so it just does prove that when people have the right resources and support systems, when the system works for them, they can be productive citizens in society. Ron is definitely a unique person in himself. He is very gifted, but I wish he could tell his story himself, but he is very adamant about, yes, there are people in there that I never want to see the light of day, that I'm afraid of, but there are also so many people that are incarcerated that are just like me. I am not special. You know, I am not just this prodigy. And so just seeing his story and getting to speak to him one-on-one and talk with him every day, it keeps that fresh on our minds that we have to continue doing this work. We have to continue advocating for those that are voiceless and incarcerated. You know, we can have a better society. If there were more Rons in society, we truly would. And I think most people don't think of those that are incarcerated in that light.
And where can people go online to keep up on everything at the project?
You can visit our website at jeffersoncountymemorial.com, or social media, honestly, is probably the best way. On Instagram, we are at Jeffco Memorial. And on Facebook, if you just search JCMP or Jefferson County Memorial Project, it'll pop up quickly. And that's the best way you can check out all of our virtual programming.
All right, Joy, thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Ray.